I thought Giraldi and the PC didn't, the American Conservative, in fact, flags that point. And that's right. You know, we have a clear problem there. And
should Bush be prosecuted? Should Rumsfeld? Should Cheney?
There should be.
Should President Obama?
There should be a really independent investigation, which still hasn't occurred as far as I'm concerned. And the basis for it has got to be disclosure of much more factual detail that's still not there. I want to add one other thing, and that is John said, you know, no CIA operation at Guantanamo. That's still a huge question. I've seen a lot of evidence suggesting the contrary. Certainly, we had the Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane operations that were going on out there,
which were
operations geared towards perhaps turning prisoners who are about to be released, turning them into assets. Of course, we have programs like that going on in every single war. You'd be guilty of some failure not to. We've got a lot of evidence linking the CIA to those programs.
John Rizzo, even if you thought you were off the record, you do stand by what you said. You're talking murder, hit list. Do you think that administration official should be prosecuted?
Well, Amy, I mean, I can't be obviously... I'm somewhat biased in this, since I was one of the senior officials involved in that took part in the implementation and conception of the program. No, I don't. Look, this is why I support the Senate report coming out. All of the facts should come out. The American people deserve to know what was done in their name and make their own judgments. But at this point, going back now and going back against the individuals, whether they be senior or further on down the chain. I mean, interrogation...
We'll have to leave it there, but
I
want to thank you both for being with us. John Rizzo's book is called Company Man, 30 Years of Controversy and Crisis in the CIA. Served as the chief legal counsel for the CIA for 7 years. And Scott Horton, thanks so much for joining us. Human rights attorney, contributing editor at Harper's Magazine. I'll be speaking in St. Louis Saturday night, March 29th, celebrating the First Amendment. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn.
It's time now to begin the new WHFR Journal, our local public affairs show about Dearborn and the surrounding area. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is for Friday, March the 28th, 2014. And I hope you're all having a great day out there. It's last time I checked, it was 47 degrees, but about 30 mile an hour winds means the net temperature was still 17. That's how it felt. Well, we can't let that stop us here on this show. We are expecting today the imminent arrival of Michigan Representative George Durrani, our 15th district voice in Lansing. And he is scheduled for the fourth Friday of each month for 2 hours at the senior rooms area within the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And so he's on his way over at this point, I assume. And my name is Jay Koronek. I'm station advisor at WHFR and also a host of this show. And so today we're going to get started with some of the local news as we're awaiting the arrival of George Durrani. Looking at the Dearborn Times-Herald, the press and guide from last Sunday, Henry Ford Community College, yes, where we broadcast from. They hold the license to the station. Thank you very much. They're contemplating a name change, and it could happen as early as next month. Thank goodness for WHFR. It's not going to be much of a change, so we don't have to, if it does happen, we don't have to change our call letters. You know, WHFR, Henry Ford Community College Radio. It looks like it's going to just become Henry Ford College. A lot of community colleges are doing that, and especially in the state of Michigan, HFCC, as we're calling it now, has received permission from the state of Michigan to do certain four-year programs, one of which is in the culinary arts, also based right here in the student center at Henry Ford Community College, running our 5101 restaurant. They're putting on a big luncheon today for honoring women in the community. It's a women's recognition luncheon. And they have special buffets, thematic buffets, every week. In fact, next week is Polish week at the 5101 restaurant. Very inexpensive for lunch. And also dinner on Wednesday and Thursday nights. You might want to check into that. It's called the 5101. That's the address of the college on Evergreen Road. 5101 Restaurant. And just search that on your phone and give them a call. Make sure that you have a reservation, though, because they really sell out the space quickly, since it's such a great deal. Such a great learning tool also. So we also hope to add a bachelor's degree in nursing if legislation is approved allowing it. That's in progress. So we will become a four-year degree institution in certain areas as deemed appropriate throughout the state of Michigan by the state legislature. Might ask George Durrani about how that's going. And also, we do have 3+2 programs. So we do freshman, sophomore, and junior year courses. We do a lot of advanced courses, okay, here at the college, more than any other community college. And those are helpful with a few of our four-year degree partners. I think Franklin University is one, and there's a few more. So in a way, they get their bachelor's degree, three-quarters of it, thanks to us. So it would become Henry Ford College if the Board of Trustees approves of that in April. Looks like there's not really too much issue about that, because also it's a financial thing. Most of the signs on campus are kind of old. They were put in 2002 when this a lot of our new buildings went up here, but before a lot of other buildings were completed and or changed in purpose. And plus the weather, you know, Michigan weather, over 12 years has somewhat damaged them, streaked them, faded them, and so on. And so we need all new signs, and quite a few, including the big one out front on Evergreen. And so since they've got to put up the cost for that anyway, it's a good time. They might as well make sure they got the right names for everything, including, well, the new name for Henry Ford Community College, becoming, we think, and it's nothing wrong with it, Henry Ford College. We'll see how that goes, though. Okay. Turning the pages here. You know, this is the only local news show on the air that you can turn the pages and get a thrill out of that one. Yep. Let's see here. City of Dearborn is looking for a developer for West Downtown Dearborn. And apparently a desirable 70-foot by 116-foot vacant lot is in West Dearborn, owned by the city, is for sale for the development of some sort of catalyst project that will amplify other significant investments in the district. Minimum bid is $20,000. Boy, that's cheap for that much land. Wow. Responses are due by April 24th. Just interesting that, you know, somebody could have made a bid already, but the city is now trying to promote and advertise the fact that, hey, let's do something together. So good for them at trying to work that out. Okay. Let's see here. Turning the pages as quickly as possible. Great columns always by Craig Ferrand, who actually doesn't get paid, nor does Morris Goodman, for their columns, their opinion columns in the Dearborn Press and Guide. They should be paid, but we're lucky to have any reporters even working part-time these days at the newspapers. And he says, Bill Gates, you know, the richest man in the world, former functioning head of Microsoft. He says, Bill Gates and I don't run in the same circles. We don't even share a common platform. He says, I'm a Mac, as am I, by the way. But recently, Bill said something and put a big smile on his face, something I've been saying for some time, but that took a guy of his stature to get noticed. Yes, when the richest man in the world talks, people notice. Isn't that amazing? Okay. He says, a couple Fridays ago at a gathering in Washington, D.C., Gates told a number of educators that Common Core standards are the key to our nation's future. He went on to say that the controversy around the national standards, quote, comes from people who want to stop the standards, which would send us back to what we had before, which is complete inconsistency. Now, yours truly doesn't want the common standards to be controlled by Congress, legislators, because I know what happened to the standards in Texas when their legislature started going, you know, teaching creationism and so on. I'm not sure that was put in place, but it was threats. Creationism has no basis in science, which means it has no basis in fact. And to yours truly, remember, all opinions on this show, mine and anyone else's, are based on, you know, just our own opinions. And not necessarily are they the opinions, the ideas supported by Henry Ford Community College, just to keep that, have you keep that in mind, okay? You know, whenever you let legislators who aren't necessarily well-educated themselves, oh, they might be a lawyer or something, but doesn't mean they have a broad-based knowledge. And in fact, Carl Sagan, one of the last things that he said right before he passed away, you know, he was the original host of the Cosmos series back in the, I think it was the 70s, great popularizer of the ideas of real science, and therefore what is proven to be really going on. Of course, that series has been updated, and now it's hosted a new series called Cosmos also. It is hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson on the Fox Network on Sunday nights, which is you know, great. It's an update. Obviously, science is always finding out more and more and getting better and better, and so you should be following that. But nonetheless, yeah, I'm totally in favor of Common Core standards and, of course, the funding that needs to go behind it so that the schools can actually afford to teach the things that are consistent across the whole country. That's what's good for the country. But Sagan said, the trouble is with education. One of the last things he said, last official statements before he died, you might say the culmination of all his ideas, is we don't want science controlled, legislated by the people in power. Okay? They are mostly ignorant of science. No disrespect here, but it's true. They're not scientists themselves. Show me a few science degree-holding legislators. Show me that. Go on. Okay? Not many, if any. Okay? So, Carl Sagan was right. We don't want government legislating the content of Common Core. But we do want a collaborative effort by all the best educators and the public to decide what should be in that Common Core across the whole United States. Okay, and then for the areas of the country that don't have enough money, let's say for science experiments, science equipment or computers, the federal government needs to make up the difference. The state can't, obviously, or hasn't in many cases, not saying Michigan. But, you know, we need to have an equal opportunity for all people to learn and grow and develop with current, useful information as decided by the smartest people, such as Bill Gates, and the public. And, of course, legislators, unfortunately, government will have to fund it, and government will have to mandate it. But when government starts getting into curriculum, oh boy, we're in trouble. So there you go. That was my spin on that. But read Craig Farran's, complete column on that. It was last Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide, and that date is March 23rd. Our Dearborn firefighters, you know, are in the last month of their biggest fundraiser. They have fundraisers throughout the year to raise money for their burn drive. That is not to support burns, but to help people who have been burned by fire or some other high temperature incident. And so we definitely want everybody to try to support them in this. And there'll be, first of all, a big party on April 29th at 6 p.m. in the Hubbard Ballroom at our Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. And the party will include open bar, food and entertainment. But, you know, a big prize is $40,000 or a Camaro, It's interesting to me. I talk to the firemen. I usually buy a ticket every year just to support the cause. It's very good, needy cause, and well managed. Every dollar goes to help people that really need it. No one in the history, and I think it's happened for a couple decades, this burn drive, no one has ever taken the car. No matter what the car was, they've never taken the car. They take the money. Why? Because they got to pay about a third back to the government in taxes on a gift. So out of the 40,000, you might be left with, about 27,000. So you just save that up. And when tax time comes, like this would be tax time next year, but you know, our tax time this year is, of course, April 15th. Don't forget about that. I'm going to ask George Duraney some questions about that when he arrives. Anyway, they're selling tickets still for the drawing, and only 1,500 will be sold. They're available at all the fire stations. Doesn't say their business hours, but I think they're 24/7. Maybe not the front desk, but anyway, you know where they are in Dearborn. That's a Dearborn Firefighters Burn Drive. All very, very needy. And, of course, there's an office in Melvindale, because it's Dearborn and Melvindale Fire Department since they merged. Okay. By the way, back on HFCC issues, the local administrator, the administrative association, that is like what used to be called department heads, division heads, they're now called associate deans. Not too many administrators here, actually, in this union, because the top level people don't have a union. You know, the top people don't have a union. But anyway, they have just agreed to a 5-year contract. Not too good, though. Local 71 has agreed to take a 3% pay cut this year, another 1% cut next year, and no increase for the following year. And administrators lower than Step 6 will have their base salary increased by $2,000 the next 2 years in lieu of moving up a step, so-called. But that's terrible. Okay. But, of course, the faculty here has taken cuts for the last several years. So we're doing our part. You know, there was a fund imbalance, let's call it that. 2 years ago, before our new president came in and started making changes, and he has done some great things to get us back on track. And unfortunately, the great faculty and staff we have are now being paid less and less. Jim Hightower, who we often run as a commentator here. He's got a comment about adjuncts, and one in particular that was a special friend of his who unfortunately passed away, Jim Hightower.
Margaret Mary Voitko died last summer at age 83, and her death has turned her name into an emotional rallying cry for adjunct college teachers who are seeking justice from their schools. Voitko taught French classes for 25 years at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, earning high marks from her students. This praise helped make up for Duquesne's poor pay. Like most teachers there, Margaret Mary was part of the adjunct faculty, a group with few rights, so schools like Duquesne can take advantage of them. And they do. As with other adjuncts, Professor Voitko was unsalaried, instead paid a low rate for each course she taught. This provided no reliable annual income, for she was never told until just before a semester began whether she'd be teaching 3 classes, 1, or none. Even in good years with full teaching loads, her pay was below $25,000, with 0 benefits. Margaret Mary's last year was certainly not a good one. Duquesne had cut her to 1 class per semester, reducing her income to under $10,000. Also, her cancer returned, piling huge medical bills on her back. With no savings or university pension, she had become so pauperized that she couldn't pay her electric bills, effectively making her homeless that winter. Her stress level was off the charts, yet she never missed a day of class. Until last spring, that is, when Duquesne fired her. In August, Margaret Mary Voitko was found sprawled on her front yard, having suffered a massive heart attack. This proud professional educator died penniless, jobless, and literally heartbroken, having been thrown away by the university that had used her for 25 years. This is Jim Hightower saying, to Duquesne officials, Margaret Mary was just an adjunct. But to adjuncts everywhere, she's become an emblem, both of their plight and of their fight for labor rights.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
I just want to say in regard to adjuncts here at Henry Ford Community College, because there's less than 200 full-time people. And obviously, who's teaching the 16,000 or so students here every semester? Well, mostly adjuncts. I think it's, I don't know the exact number, 600 to 800 part-time teachers. It has continued to increase every year. Full-time teaching in college is almost not a career possibility for anyone anymore. Full-time with benefits that you can retire with and count on. That's terrible. Don't we need career firemen, career policemen? Of course we do. And we need career teachers, too. How would you like only part-time teachers in your school? You remember back in your elementary, junior high, and high school days when they had a part-time teacher in? How good were they? They didn't know what was going on. They might not have the right background, but they were just thrown in there. You want that for your colleges of the future? Of course not. You shouldn't anyway, speaking as a former full-time teacher who had a career, imagine a career that I was able to retire from. Not too comfortably, thanks to the state of Michigan cutting my pension, but, you know, I'll make do. I just want to say here at Henry Ford Community College, we do pay more for teaching 1 3-credit-hour class than poor Mary, who was talked about by Jim Hightower. But it's not much more. I don't know the exact amount, but it is so much less than full-time. Of course, any sort of bottom-line organization that doesn't care about people or the quality of their results would hire adjuncts all the time, part-time people all the time for everything. As long as you can make money, and you make a lot more if you can cut wages, and one way to do it is to have as few full-time as possible. And maybe none, like the two local newspapers. Other than the top management, I believe, at this point, there's no full-time reporters working for the Times-Herald or the Press and Guide. That's right. No one who is paid a salary, who can act like it's their full-time job and career and be professional 24/7 in covering the news for Dearborn. No one. I mean, Press and Guide didn't even have a local editor. In fact, somebody, wasn't even named who in the Press and Guide this last Wednesday, on the editorial page put a comment about how terrible colleges are at educating people, but oh my goodness, Macomb County Community College, they're the best. They're really the best. I mean, who wrote that? The president of Macomb County Community College? No, it was probably an editor of the Press and Guide down in Southgate or somewhere, or maybe in Hong Kong, who has no idea that there's other community colleges here in this area that also have great vocational and technical programs. One-year certificate, two-year certificates, two-year degrees, with specialized vocations. We got it, okay? I mean, Press and Guide should be ashamed of running that. I mean, Macomb County Community College, that's wonderful, but didn't say anybody else was doing anything, that only Macomb County Community College was providing jobs for the people who perhaps aren't, quote-unquote, I saw in the media, college material. They need a job. They don't like studying classes. Some of that higher math may mystify them too much. Whatever it is, if you know, there are career opportunities, and we can do that training. As it is, in our English classes, I think 80% of the classes we offer in English are for people at below high school level of reading and writing. So we are a remedial institution in terms of English. So we don't even talk about, not college material, can't go to Henry Ford. Well, if you want to read or write, the odds are you haven't gotten it in your K-12 program somewhere. Well, Dearborn Schools aside, of course. You need to come to college to even improve your reading and writing, which are essential skills in any job you're going to take. And, of course, we have the English as Second Language program, too, which is pretty important. And I should point out, in regard to adjunct teachers, Henry Ford Community College has allowed the adjunct teachers, to organize, and they have their own union. That's right, and they can negotiate for contracts. Now, they still hardly get any money at all. They could have got 25 cent an hour increase a few years ago. Nothing. I mean, there are no benefits to speak of. I think there's some little things creeping in they're trying to work on, like savings accounts or something. But, I mean, I'm an adjunct instructor here, and I haven't heard. Well, I missed the last week's general meeting because I was here at WHFR. I was doing my job, so I couldn't go to the meeting. But I haven't heard that anything new has happened in terms of supporting our adjuncts. But at least they had the right to organize, and they did. They chose, the majority chose to form a union. And they have people now who speak for them, who negotiate on the issues that are important. Of course, they got a long way to go to get any sort of equity parity to pay or respect for curriculum ideas and educational changes here at the college. But we're doing better than that poor woman who was at a college somewhere in the United States and unfortunately died after being fired and suffering from huge medical bills of an illness that she had no money to pay for. Couldn't wait for Obamacare to kick in, I guess. I couldn't even afford to pay the premiums for the health exchange. See, in Canada, that's not the case. Yeah, everybody has health insurance, employed or not. Okay? What do you think of that? That's what we should have. Something like that. People say, well, we don't want Canada's system. Okay, look, there's Canada, there's England, there's France, there's Germany. They're all for France. They're all fantastic educational systems. They're educational too. Health systems, healthcare systems. France has the best healthcare in the world in terms of quality. Yes, they do for everybody in their country, if you look at it that way, not just the rich. Okay. They have some of the lowest costs, much lower costs for drugs and for healthcare. And even though everybody has to pay for that system in their taxes, therefore your taxes will go up. But you don't have to pay anything else anywhere else for healthcare. You don't have to dicker about insurance premiums and go to healthcare.gov and try to figure that out. You know, March 31st, the deadline for that, folks, if you want to get in on it. Ah, George Duraney is here. So I'm going to play a spot from Jim Hightower.
Years ago, the delightfully naughty movie star Mae West said, "I used to be Snow White, but I drifted." Less delightful are some of the purity claims of such food manufacturing giants as PepsiCo, which has long marketed a line of its Frito-Lay snack foods as simply natural. Natural? Anyone who's even looked at one of the company's strangely puffed, caterpillar-esque, cheese-powdered Cheetos would have a hard time believing nature had anything to do with the concoctions. Sure enough, PepsiCo has quietly dropped the volatile natural claim from its snack packages, rebranding them with just the word Simply. The multi-billion dollar food maker says the shift is merely a routine adjustment of its marketing scheme. But it comes only after consumer groups have taken Pepsi, Campbell Soup, and other manufacturers to court in the past couple of years, successfully challenging their use of the natural phrase as deceptive hype. PepsiCo settled one of its cases last year by paying out $9 million to the challengers and agreeing to stop labeling its Naked Juice brand as all natural. A marketing pitch for these drinks had bragged that they were, quote, the freshest, purest stuff in the world. The naked truth, however, was that they were not only juiced up with artificial vitamins and synthetic fibers, but also included an additive made from formaldehyde, a cancer-causing compound. This is Jim Hightower saying, the conglomerates say that advertising terms like natural are widely misunderstood by us stupid consumers. Well, there they go again, drifting from the truth and perverting plain English. Natural simply means what it says. Natural. As in, go squeeze an orange and don't dose it with formaldehyde and lies. To keep up with the industry's drift from purity, link up with Organic Consumers Association. They're at www.organicconsumers.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
Joined in our WHFR studio now by our special guest, as promoted and advertised, George T. Duraney, who is our representative to the House of Representatives. That's why they call him a representative, in Lansing, Michigan, our state government. Welcome to the WHFR Journal, George.
Hello. Good to see you again.
Yes. Yeah. How was your meeting with the seniors today?
It was great. We had a lot of folks that showed up and a lot of interesting topics. So I really enjoyed that quite a bit.
Well, that's a great opportunity for the seniors, but actually anybody in the community can come in. I mean, sure. They don't check your ID at the door to see if you're 62 plus.
I think I only had one senior today, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, okay, great. That's wonderful. So as I mentioned before, but if people tuned in late, that's typically the last Friday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center.
Right.
Is it called Senior Rooms or Senior Area?
Actually,
or just?
Yeah, it's just in that senior area because normally we're in the big room, but they're doing a lot of tax preparations this month.
Oh, yeah.
So we're out of the big room, and they put us in a little bit of a smaller room on the side, but you'll find us. We have signs out everywhere.
You're completing, before we jump into the questions, you're completing your second term in office. Is that correct?
Yes.
And, of course, because of term limits, if you choose to run again, that would be your last term.
I have chosen to run again.
Oh, I didn't know. So it's, darn, I was going to, thought we could break the news here on the WHFR Journal. Oh, well. So, George Duraney, your name will be on the ballot. Is the Democratic Party, it's possible you'd have a challenger in the Democratic Party in August. Do you know about that yet?
No.
There's a deadline to petition somewhere in April.
Right. The filing deadline is April 22nd. As of now, no one has taken up petitions to run against.
Yeah, because the Democratic Party doesn't really have a Tea Party contingent.
No. Not at all.
Sort of extremist who will jump in anywhere and challenge someone who has the name recognition that you do, and of course the successful running for office twice before.
Right. Yeah, so I've got knock on wood here. I've got hopefully one more term to go, and to complete my 6 years.
Yeah, but that requires people to get out and vote.
Yes.
For whoever you want to, folks. We don't take sides here on the WHFR Journal. And in fact, I'm sorry, George, we might even be interviewing the Republican running against you, or the Green Party person, or the Libertarian Party, because they don't get much money and they don't have the name recognition or your record to run on. So they're at a disadvantage anyway. So
all good people, all different points of view.
Which
makes it important to have those different points of view when we're in Lansing.
Yeah, that's what I think too. But you're there now, and you're quite a struggle because as a Democrat, you can't get too much passed if the Republican Party is unified as they usually are. So what's been happening in Lansing? You can pick the main topics. I saw one that we talked just briefly as you got in here about revising. I know Mayor O'Reilly is very concerned about losing the personal property tax, which is businesses the tax that businesses used to pay or are going to shortly not have to pay on actual property inside their buildings, things like computers and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge chunk of individual city budgets, and now there is a law that has been passed. Why don't we start with this anyway, just recently, and you voted yes on it. In fact, it passed 107-2, which is amazing, but it requires voter approval in August.
It's actually a revision of a bill that we voted on back in December in lame duck, That was, again, going to take money away, revenue away from the cities in the form of a tax break, if you will, for businesses, mainly big institutions as well, in industrial property and such, so that it affects companies that have a lot of that. It wouldn't affect typically the small business person. The small business person that has, say, assets of $80,000 or less, it wouldn't really touch them as much, but it went more for the industrial property.
Okay, well, basically, personal property tax has been eliminated for the businesses that qualified.
Yes.
But it's been replaced now for many, although exemptions are possible, is the way I read it. Very complicated.
It is very complicated.
People don't know how, if they just see the title of a bill and they see you voted for it or not. I have an app on my phone called Vote Spotter.
Okay.
I see every single bill that you vote on yay or nay. But when you go to more information, oh my gosh, the detail of the language of the bill, much less, you know, the behind the scenes, well, what impact would this really have, which is not there, is pretty wild. I mean, there's all kinds of twists and turns in every bill that just the title of the bill doesn't really tell the full story. So can you identify for me right now two things? One is, what is that alternate way to get money to the cities that are going to lose the personal property tax money? And is it going to be as much as what they got before?
Well, the original bill that we voted on in lame duck in December would have given cities roughly 80% back, 80% guaranteed back. I voted no on that bill. This bill I voted yes on because it's promising to bring a full 100% back to the municipalities. But where does that money come from?
Yeah, I didn't understand. It's some sort of business tax, although there's a group that's being that'll be set up if the voters approve of this direction that can give a lot of exemptions from it. And who knows what those might be. And I've stated on this show over and over again, I'm against tax loopholes. I'm against exemptions. I'm okay with special incentives.
Yes.
But I don't like to do it through the taxing way. I want everybody to pay their fair taxes. And I know small businesses, hey, they don't make as much profit, or they're a new beginning business. Mm-hmm. And you want to help get them
off the ground.
Off the ground, you know, give them a fighting chance and so on. Maybe. I don't know. But, it, you know, if it was a, and I guess it's you can't do it this way in Michigan, or the Republicans would, but if it was a progressive business tax, so the businesses that are making an awful lot of profit would pay a slightly higher percent, then, you know, a small percent of small businesses wouldn't be so onerous. Right now, I think it's somewhere about the business tax on income or their profits is about 6%.
6%,
yeah,
right.
But with, as you said, there's a cutoff so that some smaller businesses don't have to pay that.
Well, that's true. No, every business has to pay.
Everybody pays.
Right. Okay. Unless you fall into certain categories, too, like an LLC, and some of those do not have to pay it. That was another whole contentious thing that we did when I first got there in 2011.
Yeah, don't get me started on that, because that's another story. I just found out that LLCs, which is a kind of incorporation, a kind of small I incorporation, is often formed because you can't sue them.
Yes.
You can't sue them if they've done something wrong to you or to the environment. What a deal. That's crazy. But anyway, it's my opinion. And I've already said on the show that all opinions on the show, including our special guest, George D. Durrani, are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College. So explain what the voters have to approve. And I assume it's the second Tuesday, August 12th. That why did they choose that rather than November? But
Yeah, that was written into the original bill that it would be in I think for, so there may be a chance to change it if the voters vote it down. Then there's time to maybe get it back on the ballot again for November if something should happen.
And why did it have to go to the voters? Because it's a tax?
Yes.
A new tax in there?
Exactly.
Okay. So there was no choice. The legislature had no choice but to send it to, sometimes they send things to the voters.
Right.
Because they don't want to take a position.
No, this was because of the tax implications.
Okay. All right. But it's in the primary, folks, on August 12th. And, oh, my God, 107-2, and that's the House final vote. Has that gone through the Senate? Has it been signed by the governor?
I don't think this
is very recent, folks. This is like the last week or so.
Yeah, I don't think it's gone to the Senate yet.
But probably with that kind of support in the House.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah,
it's not a partisan issue here necessarily.
Oh, no, not at all. There were some fixes in there that made me go from a no vote to a yes vote on it. And again, the part of it, I take that back. It did go through the Senate. The Senate voted it out. Now that I think about it, it was 37-1.
Okay. Ooh.
Yeah. So it did pass the Senate. So now it'll go to the governor.
Well, I'm sure Mayor O'Reilly, and we're going to have him here for the full hour on this show in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Part of our Radiothon 2014 special events, folks. We need your support just once a year, April 6th through 12th. More about that later.
Yeah,
I'm sure he's very happy. I know he was even telling voters, I guess, even if it was the 80% thing, there would still have to be that vote in August.
Yes.
He was telling people, I know, earlier in the year, go vote in August.
Yeah.
Whatever it is going to be, vote in August for. And now he'll definitely want you to go and vote in favor for the good of the community and keeping the budget at least the same amount of money coming in as we had before.
Jay, the only question I have on this is where are they going to get the money to pay back the municipalities? Because it has to come from somewhere. And people are talking about another tax and maybe another 1% tax or one penny tax.
Right. That was, I've said, there's another business tax of some sort that was mentioned in that bill, but it hasn't been really worked out yet, huh?
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. So it could be a bigger tax for the middle class and the low-income workers to help pay for the money that the big businesses took initially.
Right. There's still a question. But
yes.
Would you recommend people vote for this nonetheless? I mean, you already voted for it.
I voted for it. But we need to work on the details.
Absolutely.
Definitely work on the devil's in the details, as they always say.
Yeah. I heard also the opposite. God's in the details sometimes.
That's true.
I mean, it's a Herman Melville Moby Dick literary thing. I used to be an English teacher. One way or the other, you got to be careful about the details.
We'll work those all out before, and people will get notice of that, obviously, before August.
Okay, education. That's the other big issue here. You're always on the journal because locally, that's what's most important to us, our kids, our families. The funding, according to Brian Winston, our superintendent here in Dearborn, he said, oh my God, we're actually getting an increase this year. It's the first year in the 6 years I've been here that we're getting any increase. Now, it's not much, but that's good, I guess, but it's not much. And what the heck is this EAA, in your own words? It is, to me, and I've said I was against it before on this show, it's legislators trying to set up a body that's really outside. I know it's approved or under the Michigan Department of Education, but it's really kind of separate and almost autonomous. And some of the people on that right now are just big businessmen. They're not lead educators.
No, not at all.
And so I'm really suspicious of them. I know its goal is to go and help the communities whose schools are doing badly in their job of educating their kids. But in fact, almost like the emergency financial manager, they can almost go in at any time and say, because they can change the standards.
Yes.
And they say, we're going to take over your district.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think there's real, of course, I've said there's real danger in the emergency financial manager law. I know you probably voted against that if you were there at that time when it was reinstated after the people of Michigan a couple of years ago said in a vote, a public vote, we want the emergency financial manager law that the Democrats had all the way through. It was a way for the state to move in when needed.
Right.
If there was like bankruptcy, if it was official, not if just because they wanted to, just felt like, well, let's take them over.
Right.
I mean, I keep hearing rumors all the time on papers and, oh, let's take over Allen Park. Well, they have.
Yeah.
Let's take over Royal Oak Township. And I don't know where Royal Oak Township is. It's not Royal Oak, the city.
No.
But anyway, did the district ask for their help? No. Did the city ask for their help? No. But there they are. They're in control. And when are they going to stop control? Who knows? Whenever they want to stop.
Right. It's up to them.
Yeah. And there's no input. I mean, there can be input, but no necessary action can be taken to change any direction that the emergency financial managers are going. And it's almost like that with the AA. Now, I know you've spoken out against that, the concept anyway, before and voted against it. But what's the current situation with the AA?
Well, I voted on the House floor on this bill just a couple weeks ago, and I voted no. And actually, just about every Democrat except for one voted no on this bill. So it was very bipartisan. It just passed 56, the slimmest margin, 56 to 54.
Wow.
So, you know, it just barely passed. And it took them on the other side probably at least a year to make sure that they had the votes in order to get this thing passed.
And this is for an expansion.
It's an expansion.
Of something that hasn't proven itself yet with only like 12 schools or 15 schools.
15 Detroit schools.
And they haven't really had any good results at all. And this is an expansion to go statewide, right?
Right. And it has passed now. So it's not very good. We're hoping that the Senate stops it in its tracks because it passed the House, but it has not gone to the Senate yet.
To be clear, this is the EAA, and the letters stand for Education Advisory?
Yes.
Something?
Achievement. Achievement Authority.
Authority.
EAA. Okay. Education okay. Achievement okay. Authority.
I can give it some nasty meanings too, if I had to. This is it's totally against, I think, the goals of community responsive education. But everybody does agree that just like with emergency financial managers, the state has a role to play when it needs to. But there's no evidence that the EAA was working. Why expand it until it can be proven to be successful?
Well, you have to look, Jay, at who was for it and who was against
okay,
it.
Okay, sure.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Who was against it? Well, teachers' unions, superintendents of schools,
Board of Education.
Board of Education was right. against it.
Right.
Just about every group that you can think of was against it. Who was for it? The EAA. The EAA was the only group that came out in support of the EAA.
Whose idea started with Republicans?
Right.
And in fact, it's a thing that was, I understand, it was think tanked somewhere else in the U.S. and Republicans just sort of latched onto the bill. This is a great idea. Boy, we can cut those teachers down. We can eliminate their unions. We can, make things run really cheaply if we just take them over. And I'm of course being very satirical, and I don't want to insult any Republicans that actually had a good, honest motive. Even though I disagree with
right.
what this could do and what this could be.
Yeah, the goal from both sides, of course, was to improve the education in those 15 schools in Detroit, because we know that they were failing schools, yeah. and we had to do something to try to raise the standards for them, and the children need to learn, just like they need to learn everywhere. Mm-hmm. But what we found out, just for the brief time the EAA has been in effect, that the test scores, in most cases, have gone down, and even those few that were proficient in reading and math, I've got a couple statistics here. The ones that were proficient in math are now 66% of those that were are no longer proficient in math, and 37% are no longer proficient in reading.
Oh,
this is
goodness.
With the EAA
yeah,
there.
Right, yeah.
So why expand it when we know it's not working?
It's really not working. It's not just 1 or 2%.
Yeah.
It's a big... big failure.
There's a couple of board members that have left because they felt it wasn't working, and they didn't want to have their names attached to this project, this experiment, which is exactly what it is.
Well, I mean, if it's so good for education, why can't the Department of Education, the Michigan Department of Education, handle it? You know, we have elected people to that to the boards,
right?
And of course, the head of that is appointed by the governor, I
yes.
believe. But still.
And he's
they're at least like really thinking about education all the time. Okay, a few of them might have got elected just because it's a small paycheck. But seriously, I mean that's where this should be based. And to have an outside group, which is mostly made up of big businessmen, rich businessmen who are not educational specialists, doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Well,
unless they're going to make a contribution, you know.
There's a board of directors rather than a school board.
Right, right.
And
right.
so that tells you all that you need to know. They're interested in making money because they're a for-profit institution. So that's where it's at. There's no transparency either. I had an amendment when this first went into effect for the city of Detroit a couple years ago, and I said, you know what, I might agree with you if you would pass my amendment that would say they would have the teachers would have the same accountability
right.
as all the other teachers in the state of Michigan.
Because right, charter schools don't.
No, right. no, they don't.
Right.
And of course, that amendment failed.
Yes.
But
you're on the education committee in the House, too, still, right?
No, I was. I
okay.
am no longer.
All right. Well, that's
yeah.
all right. But
I'm still speaking. That's why
of
I
course,
wanted to definitely
yeah.
Speak on the House floor when this went through.
So this is going to be signed soon, or this will be in effect,
yeah.
this expansion of EAA.
Yeah, well, unless the Senate stops it. It hasn't gone
no.
through the Senate yet.
Okay.
So that's our last hope, is that the Senate puts
it. Well, it might be a little closer there. Let me jump, because March 31st is the deadline to sign up for the Affordable Care Act for people that need health insurance, and that means, age 21 and over.
Yep.
And healthcare.gov is the website, and it's working. It's working, folks, so you should explore that. You should see what's going on there and get some coverage if you don't have it. It'll still cost you extra money, but you can't be refused for a prior health problem.
Students still living with their parents, that's another big
right.
part of that, too,
now,
up to 26.
Now, Michigan, somehow, Governor Snyder, about the only thing I personally can commend him on, is it gave a big push to becoming part of the Affordable Care Act in Michigan. So there is a sort of a Michigan Health Exchange.
Yeah.
And
well, it's the feds actually are setting it up for us.
Right. But yep. Michigan is going to accept the money. But
yes,
they did delay the start of it until April 1st?
Right. April 1st.
Okay.
That was the expansion. Yes.
Right. And the state has lost millions of dollars because of that for healthcare issues and this extra support.
Yes.
But what else can you say about that? Have there been some changes? I noticed there was an effort to, there was some vote to modify it.
Well, it
was voted down or something. The state vote.
The deadline is the 31st, and the last I heard is that that registration was being pretty brisk this last week. Mm-hmm. If there's anybody in the Dearborn area that needs to sign up for it, our local access group has an area in their building for
the organization access. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right on Schaefer Road in the east side of Dearborn there.
Right.
So if you needed to go, that's the place to sign up.
They would help you sign up.
Yep.
Right. That's great. I have to ask about, because I saw it back in earlier in March. I saw an email from Gretchen Whitmer, who is a Democratic minority leader in the Senate.
Yes.
And of course, as a woman, I guess she had to speak out. What's this whole thing about women needing to get rape insurance?
Yeah, it's a very controversial issue also. I mean, it seems like we've touched on a few of those lately. What it does, it makes, if you wanted to, if you felt that you might have an abortion in the future, somewhere in your life in the future, that now the insurance companies are not allowed to include that in their policies. You would actually have to go outside the policy and buy a rider, if you will, to cover any abortions that you might think about having. So the controversy then is, you know, so if a woman gets raped or there's incest, then the insurance companies can't cover it. As a matter of fact, the law, in fact, states that it would be against the law for insurance companies to offer it.
To be clear, this is not part of Obamacare. This is not the Affordable Care Act. This is something that our state legislators, no disrespect here, I know you weren't. Did you vote for it, though?
No.
Okay. Because Gretchen Whitmer would hold a grudge.
Yes, she would.
in her statement, which I have right here in front of me, she blames, of course, Republican legislators, those who decry government involvement in healthcare on a daily basis, passed a law that does exactly that, except it only applies to women. Mm-hmm. So apparently, it doesn't count as hurting their standards there. And then she goes on to say, and this is another spin on this, not just if you think you might be raped, if women out there think they might be raped, even though you have the new healthcare coverage, mm-hmm. you're going to have to pay an extra amount.
Yes. Yes.
To pay for medical services after an official criminal act on you.
Right. Right.
But Gretchen Widner goes on to say that the current rape too, current act too, at least in Michigan, said Michigan women with wanted pregnancies who are told by their doctors that something has gone horribly wrong and their pregnancy must be terminated will be told that their government doesn't think it's necessary health medical care.
Well, you know, that's the controversial part about it, Jay, I must say, because we've been told that if it involves the health of a woman, a life or death situation for the woman, then it would be covered. So
there's some interpretation.
There is some interpretation there.
And if it goes to the state Supreme Court, that's mostly Republican appointees. Well, they got elected because of Republican campaign money, so
yes,
they're probably
yes
going to go on the side of the Republicans, which are the people that currently control the legislature and the governorship.
You're right about that. Yeah, there's
a big deal.
Actually, there's nowhere to turn in that case.
Well, something's got to be done. I mean, I don't know if it's Fox News or MSNBC, but that's an example of war on women, as far as I'm concerned. That's and I know the Republicans have been blamed for that across the country on many other issues. And of course, there's the radical independent broadcaster Alex Jones in Texas, who feels that, hey, there's also a war on men too.
Right.
He's got some evidence for that, but right. But
that's
way out of step.
Yeah.
I mean as I think of it, and we'll move on because we only have 6 minutes left on the show, but rape, it's a criminal act against a woman. What if she chose not to use birth control and not to be able to convince her attacker to use a condom? I mean, it's right. Crazy, right? And she becomes pregnant. I don't think my kind of God would hold it against her to terminate that. That was if a conception based in everything that's wrong about love, anyway.
Yeah, breaking the law, a criminal act.
Breaking the law, criminal act, and she could choose to carry it if she wanted to or not, but why would she have to pay for the procedure if she chose not to? That doesn't make any sense to me, and I hope these things are challenged in court. The one thing, too, and I don't know if you can say anything about this, in Detroit, of course, because of the financial situation, and one court has already ruled on this, but I've got to bring it up.
Okay.
You know, I know that our state constitution said, it basically says pensions are sacrosanct, basically. I mean, you can't touch those. Once they're given out, that amount has to be continued. That's in our state of Michigan constitution, has right. been for a decade or two decades or whatever it is. And yet, a district judge or a federal judge, district level, has said that if it's a bankruptcy, like in Detroit, oh, it's okay.
Right.
Yeah, it's okay. How can that be okay? Now, it seems to me that should go to Michigan Supreme Court, which I think it has to go there first, and then it needs to go further
right.
to the U.S. Supreme Court, even if that takes years, because it's in our Constitution. It doesn't have any exceptions, except for bankruptcies.
Right.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
That'll just allow more cities to file for bankruptcies so they can get out from underneath paying that.
Right. Right.
And more cities will have employees that'll face the same circumstance.
I know a lot of people on pensions my age from the city of Detroit. It's not much money. They're barely above the poverty level as it is.
People are watching the city of Detroit's emergency manager law quite closely nationwide for that reason.
I'll just make this plea to you, my representative, because I live in Dearborn. I hope the Democrats take some of these issues and as a party, for their governor elect, Mark Schauer, I guess. Is that official? Not official. Well, I guess it is, right? He's going to be the candidate, probably,
yes,
Mark Schauer.
Yes.
Or some Republican Governor Association has the nastiest "don't get caught in a shower"
I saw that
TV ad. It's not even clever. It's just nasty, nasty, nasty. The worst thing in the world. But I hope the Democrats can grab on to some of these issues and say, we're going to fight it down for the people, for all the people of Michigan, fight it to the wall. And that's why we need more of us in order to make those changes.
We have a very aggressive campaign coming up in the summer. I'm really looking forward to
it.
Well, time since I've been a state rep that I see the aggressiveness that we're going to pursue this summer.
Good. And well, we'll be at Dearborn Homecoming broadcasting the first week in August, as usual. So look for the WHFR tent. Come on by, and we'll talk to you then. Certainly on that Friday, I'll be doing the journal show live out there. Road repair, some money, but not enough?
Well, that's my point of view, but it's a start. We've initiated $100 million to do the initial pothole repair, $100 million spread out throughout the state. It means Wayne County is getting $3.7 million starting April 1st. A city of Dearborn is getting roughly $400,000 again April 1st. So hopefully those road crews will be out.
But didn't Governor Snyder originally ask for a total of $1.2 billion for road and bridge repair in Michigan?
Yeah, that's at a standstill. The long-term answers to that major question have not been answered yet. And so we're waiting.
So maybe some potholes, but the bridge will still fall down.
Nothing major.
That's a metaphor.
the total amount is $215 million because another $115 million will go to the Michigan Department of Transportation to do other repairs other than pothole. But again, you're right. $1.2 million, $1 billion, $1.7 billion, effort up to $2.2 billion every single year we have to come up with to really turn around the very, very poor roads we have here in the state.
I have two more questions for you, and we're waiting for our blues DJ, Joanne Korchinska, to come in. A lot of parking problems here. It's a great Women's Recognition luncheon. Where did they let you park finally, George? Did you get into the visitor lot?
Yes,
I told them to let you in somewhere if they had to park on the sidewalk. Okay.
No, I squeezed in.
Okay. Well, she may be having trouble, too, because she's got one of those handicapped permits, and she may not not be able to get too close. So if you can say just a couple minutes,
sure.
Our podcast actually goes into 2 minutes after. So the archive for this show will be on the website. So we actually have an extra couple minutes.
I'm with you.
All right. Well, just because they were on my list here, you voted no, and I know it's more complicated than this, but there was a law that passed in the House to repeal mandatory life sentences for minors, and you voted no on that. What's going on there?
Mandatory life sentences for minors. There's a train of thought out there that those individuals still have a chance to be rehabilitated because they are minors. So hearing the evidence on both sides, you know, you have to weigh things, and that's the side I fell on that, that there is still a chance.
And I should say there, too, and I think I disagree with you in general, mm-hmm. but the details, there's actually more to that than just a repeal of mandatory life sentences for minors. There's ways, in terms of what passed, there are ways to actually get some probationary situations or shorten these periods. There's actually some language in there that actually, I don't see how a mandatory life sentence for anyone
right.
makes sense. I mean, if you think somebody deserves to spend the rest of their life in jail, then okay, the judge and the jury can decide that perhaps if they're allowed
sure.
to. But I don't see how any life sentence should be mandatory. For example, I had a friend in Detroit who brandished a firearm. He was woken up in the middle of the night at his house in Detroit, didn't know what was happening, bang, crash, okay. Turns out it was a Detroit police SWAT team that was coming into a home nearby.
Okay.
Well, half asleep, he grabbed his gun, which he had a legal permit for, and had it in his hand when he came out the door to see what was going on. And that's our DJ coming in. And he was given a mandatory sentence in Jackson for 2 years.
Okay. Wow.
Nothing on his record, not a criminal, wasn't doing drugs, didn't shoot the gun, point the gun at anybody. He had it in his hand, holding it up, saying, what's going on? They knocked him down. They beat him up. Of course, they took away the gun. And the judge had no choice. 2 years.
Wow.
Mandatory.
Right.
For brandishing a gun. Of course, it was the police's interpretation. Of course, they said he was trying to kill them, but the judge threw that out, mainly because of...
We just had another law about brandishing a gun that just actually just passed.
Mm-hmm. Hope she came in there now. Okay, and watching for our DJ to get in the front door. There may be no one there to let her in. Oh,
uh-oh.
My goodness. Okay. If you see someone there, George, let me know. My
All
back's
right,
turned
I'll
to
look, it. Okay. I'll look at it.
All right. The last one that I'll bother you with is you voted yes to require community service by welfare recipients. Explain that one, if you can.
If I can.
Well, I mean, there's more details going on than just that summary. I know, but that's what the law is called, and basically that's what it does, is that welfare recipients will be required to do community service. Now, some of them already have to do some.
Right, right. And that was where my angle was on this one, because if you're already required to do it, I didn't think it should be eliminated from the statute. And that was my reasoning behind it, because if it's already there, it's already in the law, then we're not really changing anything.
But you're requiring everybody.
Well, I don't think it would be everybody yet.
I know it's not. Yeah. I read the details, or at least the paragraph, and it's not quite everybody. But
right, if you're physically able to,